You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the value of the work that God does in these places. I am your host, Joe Epley, and this is actually part two of a conversation where from time to time, we like to reach out for resources that are beyond just this podcast and highlight them for you whenever we come across something that we feel like can bless rural pastors and leaders. And so if you tuned in last week, you got to hear my reflections on a book called Flyover Church by Pastor Brad Roth. And honestly, I'll say it again here because it bears repeating. I just loved this book. I've always admired authors' ability to put words to things that I've felt and kind of grasped for when I talk about the rural experience and how to pastor effectively through it. And so with that tone in mind, I am just so excited here in a moment to introduce the pastor and author, Brad Roth. It is not his first time on this podcast. He actually came out with a book previously called God's Country. And that link will also be in the show notes, as will this today's book, Flyover Church. But I enjoyed the interview last time. I'm confident we're going to enjoy it this time. And I am just, I have been so blessed by his contribution as an author to just, again, putting words and thoughts and ideas and tools in the hands of rural pastors and leaders when it comes to, you know, working through our experience and pastoring small towns well. So I do want to start this off by saying, Pastor Brad, how are you today, man?
Yo, I am doing good. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you on this podcast. And thanks for your kind words about my book. It was a labor of love.
Yeah, and it honestly really shows. Again, I think it's always so interesting to see when someone writes clinically about a situation and when someone writes, it's kind of a sense of bleeding from the pages where you're saying, hey, my life has been wrapped up in this. And I think that comes through pretty clear in the tone. Well, hey, to start off, you have been on this podcast before, and I will encourage listeners to kind of scroll back through our episode list and check out your previous interview. But for those who may be new and just joining us, can you give us kind of a 2-minute flyover of your ministry journey? You know, who you are, where you came from, what you've been doing, and what you're doing now.
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in small town Illinois, and we've lived different places, but somewhere along the line, God kind of got a hold of me to serve his church. And I didn't really set out to be the rural church guy or a rural church pastor, but the settings that I found myself in have, for whatever reason, you know, God's goodness, God's providence, they've been rural. And so we've been here in central Kansas in a small rural community for the last 11 plus years, and I've served a couple of different churches and had a chance to connect with folks across the board from different denominations and from really tiny little settings, you know, congregations and communities of 100 people up to a little bit larger small town settings. And I'm just fascinated by the rural church. I love the rural church. And I think in a lot of ways, we're still kind of in this rural moment. And I'm super excited to be a part of this, where we're thinking deeply about what it means to serve God's people in these beloved, you know, what people would call flyover places, but they are places that matter to God, and I'm excited about what's going on.
Yeah, and I think I really love that your title is Flyover Church, because again, Kansas epitomizes the definition of a flyover state to a lot of people, but there are many other people who feel that common sense of overlooked. But I do want to dive in. So really, the way I framed this was really me just picking different points in the book where I was like, man, you know, whether someone picks this book up or not, these are principles that I would love to pull out in conversation. So the first one to mention is, you open the book in a way that is so valuing to rural context, but you say this phrase, you said, rural contexts need a deeper or require a deeper and more committed knowledge of place than other contexts. Can you explain to us what you mean by that and why it's so important?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the places that we have to really begin with as practitioners of rural ministry. And I'm kind of riffing on the work of Daniel Shea and Nicholas Jacobs. They're both sociologists out of the Northeast, and they're kind of coming at this trying to understand rural, you know, to bring some insights to, you know, like the larger political kind of shifts and whatever. But I think it holds true for us as we come into this as rural ministers and rural leaders. Rural identity is a identity that is based in a unique way on place. And some of that is straight up geography, just the geography of the land. But I think it's also kind of in a deeper sense, the relational geography of how people are connected in the present and even connected going back into time. And so like, you can't kind of separate the rural person from that sense of groundedness. Not that they're all like working the land as farmers, but that sense of groundedness that they're in this place, in this web of relationships, in this particular unique corner of the earth. And I think that, you know, in some ways that's humanity, but I think that there it's kind of upped a degree in rural settings. And we really have to pay attention to that. Just like to be aware of like this sort of basic question, where are we? When we enter into a rural space, and if we've lived in a community for a long time and we're entering into leadership in the church, I think maybe kind of asking that question afresh, like what makes us in this place?
Yeah. And I think it's true that, you know, there's certain places where I'm like, man, if I am in a larger suburban setting, there's not necessarily the same expectation that I would know the history of a Minneapolis or a Chicago, which does not denigrate those places. It just means that there's a different set of rules, right? Whereas like in a rural setting, people want me to recognize and enter into their stories. You know, they want me to know the history of the small town and to peruse the museum and to hear about the main street businesses. And it brings that sense of known and knowable that you highlight elsewhere, you know?
Yes.
Second question here. You mentioned that rural ministry especially, and I'd say ministry in general, but really rural ministry especially, is more of a presence-based job and not a task-based one. And you speak of cultivating this internal disposition of ministry, developing kind of this way of life as a rural pastor to think that way. Would you unpack for us again, what does that mean? What does that look like? Talk to us about that.
I think that's so important for how we approach rural ministry. And I think you're right. It has something to do with ministry in general. But, you know, in one way, this is the fishbowl effect that can be so overwhelming to people when they end up in a small community. It's sort of like everybody knows your business. They sort of see you. They know when you go in and when you go out. And so it's kind of, in its negative iteration, it's this sense of like, oh my goodness, I'm being watched at all times. But I think in a positive sense, we can kind of leverage that. And it's like, we are with people over the long term and have the opportunity to be a pastor to a whole community. And I think that's kind of unique just because there's a certain boundedness, and it's, you know, people come and go in rural communities like they do anywhere, but there's a certain boundedness to the population of a rural community where, you know, there are kind of the regulars. There is sort of a sense of like, these are the old families, or, you know, these are the newcomers that have started to engage with the community and move into town. And you can really have an outsized impact just by living the Jesus way of life among them and with them over the long term. I mean, it's kind of having some patience to realize like, look, there's a real good chance I'm going to get a chance to talk to this person again. You know, that this first encounter for me isn't necessarily going to be the only encounter that we have. And so you could just kind of take it easy with people, be non-anxious with people. I'm thinking about evangelism in some ways, but I'm also just thinking about kind of our overall witness that we truly track how we're living in terms of years, maybe even decades, rather than, you know, how many times we're able to kind of connect with somebody in a given day or week. And I think where I've seen this play out is that I've just lately been bumping into churches and pastors of churches that almost seem to have no strategy and no particular ambition. And this is kind of just something that I've been sitting with. And, you know, it seems like what they have committed to do is just live life with the people over the long term, be faithful in preaching, be faithful in caring about folks and taking care of the community. And, you know, that's opened up doors for folks to be able to, you know, do a funeral for somebody that doesn't necessarily have a local church connection or, you know, be there when tragedy strikes. And, you know, I've been sitting a lot with this idea of ambition. That's something maybe we could talk about that a little bit, but this basic presence Like that's kind of the beginning of it all. It's not the only thing, but it's the beginning of being able to do ministry faithfully and well in rural places.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe take a good sidebar for us. How does that relate to ambition in your mind? Like, what is that kind of connection there? Build that bridge for us.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think part of it is like that there's always this risk in rural places of being disappointed. And even if we're not completely aware of the ways that we are disappointed, like sometimes it's just like, man, this place is small. Is my ministry mattering here? It's like these existential questions that we kind of carry with us. But I think in a larger sort of cultural flow of things, there's a way in which all of us as pastors are kind of haunted by Jim Collins' Good to Great. And I mean, I saw this the
Yes,
other day.
yeah.
I was at a football game the other day and I saw somebody wearing a sweatshirt and it said on the back a quote from Jim Collins that said, "Good is the enemy of great." Like we've all internalized that in some way. And I mean, I think in we're like driven for more. And in one way, that's not a bad thing, right? Like
Right.
in one way, it's kind of like good to have a godly ambition to see more happen in our rural churches and rural settings. And I think so often, like rural pastors can kind of set our ambitions too low at sort of the level
Sure.
of a shrug and just be like, oh well, like what can I do, right? Just love the people, I'll just be present here. But you know, that presence, that's kind of to miss what that presence is, right? That's the starting place, but it's not the ending place. And I think we have to have some humility about what our aspirations and ambitions actually are, and just recognize that we're not in full control of events in our church, in our community. I mean, this sometimes we are dealing with really huge currents in the life of a rural community that you know are going to shape what's possible for us. And so I think in one way, like pastoral leadership is a little bit like prayer. Like I always kind of go to this theological place and this, like, how do we practice this in a spiritual way? It's sort of like prayer. You know, it's this, what's the foundational rule of prayer? Well, it's continuing to show up and it's being present to God, like having that disposition of presence to God day in and day out and being prepared to respond when God moves for something more. And I've wondered if that's kind of an image of how, as pastors, we live out our ministry in rural places. Like you keep showing up, you keep being present to people. And it's the basic stuff of like you go to the football game and you go to the community
Right.
event, you serve in the food bank, kind of whatever your kind of your avenues for that presence are. You know, you're plugged into the school, whatever that is for you and your community, or the coach or something like that. You continue to show up. But you kind of don't try to force things to happen. Like you sort of are ready to do more when God is ready to do more. And
Yeah.
I know that could be a cop out, but I feel like there's a way in which we have to have that kind of faithful patience with our rural communities and not let ourselves get disappointed that we're the congregation or the community is not ready to move from good to great or whatever that is for
Right.
us.
Well, and I think something you said definitely has just light bulbed in my mind because, again, I've probably done, I don't know, over 100 interviews on this podcast alone. And so I hear, you hear the basic fundamental building blocks of rural ministry. You talk about community engagement, school system focus, all these different things. But I have never thought of it in these terms until you said that out loud. But like, it's not just going to the football games, it's the way in which you go to a football game. Like, it is. Like I can go to the football game because I'm coming in going, oh, this is the tool that I need to do to like build the church to something huge. And people are just gonna pick up on your level of stress and anxiousness, or it's like, well, I'm part of the school because I have to because that's gonna grow my church. And it's like, no, just be a part of the church as a relaxed part of the community, or be a part of the school and part of the football games. And like, and the way in which we take part, I think sets people at ease or kind of puts up a defensive wall. And so I really love, man, I really love that concept. So thank you. Yeah, thank you for diving into that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe, just it's being ready to have normal conversations with people. Like there's
Right.
a starting point, just have
Yeah, not
normal
everything's
conversations with
strategic.
people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's huge. Well, let's talk about a story that you share in the book. Because again, this is something I encounter a lot. Like my role now is to kind of oversee the youth department for the Assemblies of God for the state of Montana. So you got these 80 different churches, 80-ish different churches, and a lot of them find themselves in these small towns. And I hear this a lot where people come into a rural place and they're so busy trying to craft the church as they would like it to be that sometimes it creates this disconnect from loving the church as is. And so maybe relay this moment with a congregation member you had, and then talk to us about why it's so important to, again, carry the tension or which side we should even land on, you know?
Yeah, well, I just remember it with the first church that I served. And, I mean, we all come out of the gates of Bible college or seminary or whatever our pathway into ministry is, and we make a lot of mistakes, right? At least I did. And
Sure.
you have these, you have stars in your eyes in the very best way. You are responding to God and His call on your life, and you have this hunger for God to be moving in people's lives and to be moving in the church and the community. You want to see that more. And when it doesn't play out as quickly or in the way that you think it's going to go, I mean, this is like classic, I guess, but like you can become disappointed. And I remember there was somebody in one of the church that I served that just kind of threw a cup of cold water in my face metaphorically by saying, "Wow, that we're I'm sorry that the church hasn't been what you thought it would be." And there was a part of me that's like, "Wow, has it been that obvious? I'm wearing
Sure,
it
that I've been
that much on
frustrated
my
and angry
sleeve."
about it, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I sure I felt that, but I thought that I was kind of managing that. But I think it's like just how transparent I often am. And it kind of just reminded me that's a call to repentance. Honestly, that was God's word to my heart right then to step back from some of what I had been carrying. It was not justified. And part of it again is just like this cultural air that we are breathing, in which we've all heard that junior high graduation speech where you can go do anything and be anything. And so like kind of shoot for the stars and maybe you'll hit Earth. And so you're out there doing that. And in the meantime, people are living their lives. The community is what it is. The church is where it's at. And in kind of trying to make the church your thing, sometimes you miss out on the opportunity to just do what is good and true, what is faithful, where the church is at right then. And there's always a certain amount of tension about loving the church where it's at and calling it on to something more. Like, I don't want to lose that. There is a tension that we got to live with in ministry, but we can get so fixated on the one end of that spectrum where we're calling it to more that we completely forget to just respect and honor the story of how the church got to where it's at right then. And I'm bad at this. I'm still bad at this. Like
Yeah, you're
I
like, I am speaking as someone who stinks at it. Yeah.
yes, exactly. I'm a dreamer, and I think part and parcel of leadership is that when you come into a place, like you have a certain critical eye, and you're thinking to yourself, like, here's something we got to work on. Here's something we could do better, right? We can
Yeah, it's everything from
rejig.
hospitality to greeting to teaching to worship. I mean, you're going to come in and go, here's a church that needs help. Because again, if you walk in with any semblance of understanding of church leadership, you're walking in going, we could do more, we could do differently. And like, it's an instant struggle and for some people, you know?
Right. And I think that's part of what good leadership is. You're noticing things. And I don't want to cut that nerve, but at the same time, like, it can't be all that we do. We have to have this capacity to kind of just be patient, to be present, to sort of respect the story of the church. And so I think that's, it's a growing edge for me, but when I've seen pastors do that well, it gives them a sense of being at peace. It's that kind of it's restfulness. I mean, there's sort of like in the Christian tradition, there's a restlessness that is negative, and that's kind of like,
Sure.
Augustine and Hippo saying our hearts are restless until they rest in you. It's like that seeking that knows there's something more that we're longing for, but there's also kind of a restlessness that is God driven. And you've also seen some of the greatest spiritual giants of the church have a restlessness that says, "I can't stop here, that God is calling me and us to more." So it's holding those two kinds of restlessness together.
Yeah, man. Man, those are good thoughts. Let's talk a little bit about kind of moving into the a little bit of the process of what rural ministry looks like. I really loved you had kind of highlighted this verse that comes out of Peter, and it was talking about, be always prepared to defend your faith, do it with this gentleness and this kindness. And But the way you broke down that, whether the verb I'm making up is probably exposited, that passage. But I know that your insights about listening and speaking and how that relates to sharing our faith in a rural context were really good to me. And so I would love to hear when we say pre be prepared to defend your faith, talk about how it relates to the listening and speaking process in the rural church.
Yeah. Well, I think the way that this plays in a kind of with a special angle in rural churches is because of the fact that people are going to know who we are before we know who they are. I mean, it's part of that fishbowl effect. We kind of don't have to s start with by making the case for our church, for the gospel, for whatever, because they already kind of know what we represent and who we are, or at least they think they do. And so I think one of the best things that we can do is just to listen to people. Okay, in one way, it's strategic. It's giving space for people to talk, and people like to be able to tell their story. That's just a natural human need. But in another way, I think it's coming with this gentleness that Peter is talking about. When he says, "Be ready to defend your faith," that sense of the apology, the apologetics of faith, being, having our own kind of story together, the way that God has worked in our life, to be able to speak from the heart, like you were alluding to earlier, having some skin in the game for how Jesus has been at work in our life and what the church means for us, the gospel means for us, being ready to do that, but to do that from a place of hearing where people are coming from first. And I think it's also something we do for the whole community. It's listening to the narrative the community is telling about itself over the years, over the generations, kind of having a sense of what our identity is. Who people in rural places want to know that we're one of them, that we're for them. And we can get that wrong by, putting the cowboy boots on too soon before, it's
Yeah.
in a way that's, or in a way that's not
Pretending I've been
authentic
to a
to who we
branding, and
are.
I get it.
Yeah. But we could do it right when we're curious and interested and seeking to learn about this, the rural community. And I think some of this gets back to just like, what does it mean to do evangelism? Let's recognize that the moment that we're living in some ways it's post-Christian and people are unfamiliar with the message, but in other ways, like that doesn't completely fit in the, in a way that it might in, I don't know, England or Australia or something like
Sure,
that. And I
sure.
think like often people come with some kind of Christian background, even if it was just through their grandma or whatever. And so they're not completely unfamiliar and we can spend some time listening to them. We don't have to jump right in trying to explain where we're coming from. And I really love one of my spiritual heroes is Ignatius of Loyola. He's the founder of the Jesuits, and he was a he came out of the 16th century, and he was described by his peers as a conversational apostle. And I like that so much. I think that's kind of the moment we're living in right now, to be conversational apostles, right? You search up the image of an apostle, and you're going to see something like Peter in Acts chapter 2 standing on this
Yeah.
balcony after Pentecost, and it's thousands of people, and he's got his arms out and he's proclaiming the gospel in a loud voice. And that's one vision of apostle. That's what was called for in that moment when Peter is making the case for faith in Jesus for the first time. But for our context, I think a lot of times that's not going to get us anywhere. And what we, a lot of we're operating in quieter spheres of influence where I think what God's calling us to do is to be these low-key conversational apostles, where you're talking to somebody at the football game, or you're talking to the new family at the sidelines of the soccer game, or at the school event, or at the coffee shop, or whatever that is for you, and just letting some of that conversation play out, confident that God is in it and God is good. And you got to be ready to speak when the door opens up. Every once in a while, people will just bring a existential question about life and
Yeah.
eternity, and boy, don't miss the chance. Like, don't be afraid to talk and talk boldly. But like up until that moment, I think it's okay to just let conversation happen.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes from the book, kind of switching gears again. You mentioned the story of the rural church is the story of God in the struggle. And I just really deeply identified with your definition of rural as this like place of struggle. where we hit all these different factors, whether it's, man, the heyday of this town has passed. We struggle to have sustenance. We struggle to have jobs. We struggle to have population. We struggle for whatever reason. But I really was attached to the concept of God kind of being the God of the struggle with us. And so, again, what does this mean? How does this play out? Why is it so important to see God as the God of the struggle with us, you know?
Well, part of it is just beginning with testimony. I mean, that's been my own experience. Like, I've faced struggles. I've experienced those internal struggles of what am I doing here? What am I supposed to be doing here? But also kind of that larger question of how do we live out ministry that's faithful and effective in this place? But then when I talk to other rural leaders, I keep hearing stories like that from them as well, that there often were deep times of struggle that they had to find their way through by God's grace, and that the testimony of how they wrestled in their prayers and struggled through some hardship, like that becomes part of what is a door opener and what is attractive in the rural church and in the rural community. And I think also it's a theological concept. I mean, what is rural? I mean, in some ways, it's the wilderness that you see in the scriptures. In some ways, it's the desert that the Holy Spirit drives Jesus into at the beginning of the Gospel of Mark. And so we are going with him with that same kind of intentionality. I mean, we are entering into rural spaces knowing that from the get-go, they are places that aren't going to necessarily be easy to minister in. And to just rather than to kind of like take our knocks or to grin and bear it, to sort of transform that and say, like, this is a feature of what God is doing here, not a bug. And we are called to be a people of struggle. And we don't want to get, again, like, there's always sort of this, like, is it a balance? Is it a taking kind of on the one hand and the other? God shows so much favor and goodness in our lives, in our ministry. I mean, Jesus came and proclaimed the year of the Lord's favor, and in my mind, that word, that the beginning of his proclamation just continues until the end of time, where he is showing us his unmerited favor. And so we want to watch for those signs too. But I think we can embrace the fact that there is going to be struggle, and so, like, let's just kind of, like, sort of stand strong, chin out, to enter into this place of struggle wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and I think that concept is just so powerful because of how much, not only does it validate a shared experience, but again, it validates a biblical one, of just the reality of, like, a lot of calling is pleasure and pain, and I don't think rural is the only context where that seems to be highlighted, but it definitely is there, where you kind of roll into these situations and go, man, this is not as fun as I would like it to be all the time. But the fruitfulness that comes from those seasons obviously is part of the process of God shaping people. Next one, and again, just kind of working our way through the book here. One of the conversations that I think has always been so tough, and actually, I really resented one particular spot in your book because you called me out pretty hard, unintentionally. But we talk about metrics a lot. How are we measuring success? And obviously, I don't even know if I want to call it the sin of the American church, but I do believe it's a system that's left wanting, is that we are numerical in how we measure growth, and I thought I had escaped that, by not really, obviously, in a rural church, you can't really brag too often about numbers just in their purest form. But then you included this chunk in your book where you're like, hey, but even when you change and talk about the percentage of the community you're reaching and the percentage of impact, you may have ruralized that conversation, but you're still measuring with the same broken yardstick. And I was like slapped. I was like, okay, first of all, just because I've said that a lot, okay, does not mean that, And obviously, we're not coming at it saying, hey, you can never measure numerically. Like, it's not that that's not a metric. But one of the conversations that I thought you brought up that was right on the money is you talked about, as a pastor, the need to process, to think through, to find a way to measure success differently. And so, being very practical in this next answer, what is kind of some guidelines for this process for rural pastors to discover the right metrics with which to measure their church?
Well, joke, my hand is on your shoulder in sympathy. I mean, we're all in this. It's like, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to measure something because we want to be able to know if we're making an impact. And I don't think that is wrong. I think that
Yeah, not at all.
you see some examples of that in the scriptures. I mean, people always will point to like the book of Acts, where it's like the numbers are given there of how many people come to faith, right? So it's not all wrong. And yet we know it's got to be more than that. And even we pay lip service to the fact that it's got to be more than that. It's hard to internalize it and really live our lives and kind of just to place our blood, sweat, and tears at the service of something more than just numbers. And I think that there is a kind of a temptation to get stuck on that. And these sorts of conversations can always become a little bit like there's always a risk of them becoming pat and somebody saying like, oh, just don't worry about numbers, just kind of toss that out the
Yeah.
window.
Yeah, 'cause you don't want to
That
go
doesn't
that
seem to
route
be
either. Like, it's not
right
fair to
right and
say, "Oh, it doesn't matter if you're reaching people." Like, that's not fair.
exactly right yeah and I didn't hear you to be saying that, but just like I know that that's always kind of one risk is just sort of square that circle by saying, oh, toss out numbers altogether. But I think what we need is a balanced approach. Okay, sure, we need some numbers. We need to be asking ourselves, are we reaching new people? And kind of like then contextualize those numbers a little bit and for where we're at. If you're in a town of 100 or 300 or 500 people, and if you've got a couple of new folks or a couple of new families that's connected to your church, like that's a metric to pay attention to. Yeah, sure. And sort of sheer numbers, that doesn't compare to a suburban congregation that's really on a in a growth area, on a growth trend. But that shows that, and if you can say like, those connections happened because we're taking seriously being faithful to good doctrine and preaching the gospel faithfully, because we have people in our congregation that are reaching out to newcomers, like to be able to give some context to that number. I think that's what's going to matter the most, because then that larger framework of where you're at. I mean, this is kind of back to our original conversation of knowing where we're at and knowing when we're at. It is what's going to matter more than whether that little line graph goes up or down as far as numbers and giving or some of those traditional metrics. And yeah, what I've attempted to do in the book is to go back to Paul's words in Galatians, where he's talking about the fruits of the Spirit, and to sort of be playful with those a little bit and say, like, are there ways that we can use the fruits of the Spirit as a kind of a doorway into some metrics that are going to be more appropriate for rural, sort of the scrappy metrics for the rural community, and like love, joy, peace. You think about those just to start with. And I, like, for example, or patience, kindness, goodness, like, just start with love. Like, are we loving God? Are we loving our neighbors, right? In sort of
Right.
concrete ways, or goodness. I kind of love this one because I think this is such a rural one. Are we just letting God's goodness pour into the neighborhood? Are we doing something good for the neighborhood
Yeah.
where, like, whether it's recognized or would be memorialized if the church were to close, like that's sort of immaterial. But are we doing God's goodness in this place? Like, one of the churches I served started doing this chicken barbecue in the lovely park area that was right next to the church that they owned, and invited all the neighbors. And sure, that was a space to talk to people, and for sure there were some invitations that came out of that. But the fact of it was, it is good to eat barbecue chicken together, and that is it. Like,
Yeah.
it is the kind of the
The deepest
goodness of
spiritual
that
point
gift.
of this story is that it's good to eat
Yeah,
barbecue chicken together. Like, that's it.
exactly. Like, we're just giving you chicken. Come on over. And yeah, we want you to come to our church, and 100% we want you to know Jesus. But like, let's just start with sharing this goodness. So, kind of to give that larger framework count, sure, but don't stop at counting and don't start with counting. Let there be that larger framework for your metric.
Yeah. So as a last question for our conversation today. But truth be told, and I just want our listeners to recognize, like, if you took all the things I underlined and highlighted in last week's episode, all the questions we asked here, like, we are barely scratching the surface of the wisdom in this book. Like, and I know that I sing your praises, Brad, but like, this book is just such a gold mine. And there was even questions. I actually wrote down my original, it was like 12 questions, and I was like, man, I haven't texted these two of them. I mean, I'm going to text them at 10 o'clock at night the night before. Like, we're not going to go there. You know, I don't have all that time, you know, but I just encourage you guys to pick up this book. It's really good stuff. But last question here was probably the one that emotionally impacted me the most. And even last week's episode, I got near the end of recording it and I was just feeling it because you talk about the central concept to how we process the rural church with all its struggle, all its decline. Rural is a place of community and life, but it is often a place of struggle and decline and death. And you know, I remember the story you shared in the book where you said there are some churches that have more saints above in heaven than they do on earth below that are connected to their body. And so we talk about walking through this, but you mentioned the hope of resurrection, not just as a one-time event, but as a thing that can happen in a rural context. So just dive into that a little bit. Give us what that hope is, because I know there's going to be a lot of pastors out there facing decline and death and these frustrating elements of what the rural context can be. And so talk to us about resurrection, man.
Thanks for that, Joe. Maybe I'd start off by saying what this hope for resurrection isn't. I don't think it means that every congregation is guaranteed to be revived, to be resurrected, and kind of all the ways that we might think of that if we just sort of play our cards right, if we preach faithfully and have the right music or whatever that is. Like not every congregation endures forever. The church with the big C, the bride of Christ, will always prevail. We will be the people of God into eternity, but there is room in God's good providence for individual congregations to die for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to always be because of unfaithfulness or sin. It can just sometimes be that the puddle they dried up, and God, you know, that God is doing something different. God is still faithful through that. But where I really see this hope of resurrection is to keep our perspective on the long game, and I mean the really long game, on God's work across the centuries. We just don't know the ways that God is using what we are bringing to the church in this time and place. Every once in a while, you get a little hint of that, where you have, like, you know, say a young person that was in your youth group when you were a, you know, fresh pastor, come back and talk about what they're doing and how that, you know, the that their life of faith was shaped by your ministry. You get some of those little clues, but we don't know how God is using our gifts. And we have a hope in a God who, as G.K. Chesterton says, knows his way out of the grave. And there are going to be ways that resurrection is going to kind of break through, surprisingly, across the years and the generations. And the other one is to just watch for signs of God's resurrection now. Watch for God's favor. I think it's okay to pray for God's favor in our situation, to have a wholehearted confidence that God desires goodness to be poured out in our lives as his leaders, and also in the life of the congregations that we're serving and the communities that we're in, and to watch for those places and to be open to being surprised. You know, I think sometimes we don't even know what God's favor is, and we've been taken in by some of those cultural narratives that have been revealed to be hollow. I mean, sort of these big name preachers that were commanding the headlines even just a couple of years ago, that it turns out were behind the scenes not men to emulate. And not all of them, of course, but there's just been too many of those folks that have fallen off the pedestal. And so
Sure.
we have looked at that and thought that is God's favor, when it turns out, well, the story's a little more complicated. We don't exactly always know what God's favor is. So I think being aware of the way God's resurrection power is breaking out in surprising ways, and kind of have eyes to see some of that, you know, that being a Moses who can notice that the bush is on fire and pause and take a look and ask a question of what is going on here. So I think just it's a hopefulness across the generations and for more, and it's a hopefulness in our own moments to watch with those hopeful eyes to see what God is doing.
Yeah, man, what a note to just end on and reflect on in terms of our conversation today. Again, Flyover Church by Brad Roth, incredible book. But I do want to, before we kind of end our time today, just give our listeners a chance to connect with you personally. And so in addition to your books, you know, number one, where do they find these books? And number two, is there any other online presence or way they get connected with you or your ministry?
Yeah, you can find my books anywhere you like to buy books. And I encourage you to support your local small town bookstore. But of course, you can find them online too, and through Herald Press. And if you want to connect with me, probably the best way is to look up my personal webpage, which is doxologyproject.com.
Very nice. Well, and we will include a link to both God's Country, to Flyover Church, and to Doxology. Project.com as well in the show notes. And so I guess, yeah, one more thing. I just want to say thanks, Pastor Brad, for being on the podcast today.
Yo, this has been so good. I pray it's a blessing to everybody who's listening.
Absolutely. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, again, we hope you walk away challenged and encouraged and inspired. Again, it is our goal not just to talk to rural, but to talk from a place of rural. And we hope that you have walked away with that impression today. I can tell you all the usual ways to find us. You can go to ruraladvancement.com. You can check us out on Spotify or Apple Podcast. But true to the small town, as I've learned today, a new term, conversational apostolic form here. Honestly, the best way to spread this podcast around is to find fellow rural leaders and practitioners and just say, hey, I've got a resource you can check out. I've got a conversation you need to hear. And help us do that, you know. And so for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Brad Roth. And we will see you next week.